Looking for the best place to buy tickets for any of your favorite teams or sporting events? We've got the spot. Our partner, StubHub, has been the leading ticket marketplace in the world for over 20 years, providing a 100% guarantee with every order. From a worldwide selection of live events, the widest choice of tickets and industry-leading partnerships, StubHub has what you need to purchase with confidence. StubHub, an official partner of The Athletic.
Hello, and welcome to the TIFO Football Podcast. I'm Joe Devine, and I'm joined now in the studio by JJ Bull the Bullet. Hello, JJ.
Hello, Joe.
How are you?
I'm good, and as you can see, I work for TIFO.
Yes, I can see that very loud and clear, and I like the way it looks. Now, for listeners who can't see JJ, he's wearing a delightful yellow T-shirt, just hanging ever so softly and sweetly off of his breastplate, with a big black TIFO logo across it, which is nice. And I'm wearing this nice white T-shirt. And would you like to describe it for the listener?
It has a pitch on it with little circles which denote individual players and the passing movement towards Zinedine Zidane scoring a goal at Hampden Park in Champions League final.
And it's got a little TIFO logo on it at the top as well.
To show that you also work for TIFO.
To show that I also work for TIFO. If you'd like to work for TIFO, you can buy a T-shirt. You can't buy them yet, though. Because of suspense, you'd probably be able to get them next week. Seb, what are you wearing?
I'm just wearing a normal non-TIFO branded jumper. I don't quite work for TIFO, so that's kind of appropriate.
You're wearing a cricket jumper that you probably got when you studied at Eton.
Yeah, no, but it's not like that. Mm. But I could have got many of them. They were generally gold rather than white, though. Kind of like the TIFO yellow, but nicer, shinier.
Right. Okay. So this is the first ad for our merch, and your role here is to say it's rubbish. That's good. Anyway, guten Tag, Herr Stafford Blore, all the way from Germany there, calling in through the power of online. Now, if you like the power of online, I think one thing that you'll really, really like is TIFO merch. No, not that. It's The Athletic. If you visit theathletic.com/TIFO, you'll find that the power of online fills you and your whole being with joy and football knowledge, such as it did to me this weekend, JJ, when I read, it was Monday morning, I read Michael Cox's piece on Cristiano Ronaldo at Manchester United, the sort of lack of pressing, the pressing issue, something Alex and I spoke about last week on the podcast, reaffirmed what I already thought, which is one of the reasons I like reading things. Also, 99% of the things I read on there I haven't already thought, which is the other upside.
I'm glad to hear that. Do you want me to contribute something else to this?
No, that's good enough.
Well, I think it's great too.
Great. Well, there we go. Now, if you visit theathletic.com/TIFO, you will find that there's a 30-day free trial there for you to take advantage of. And I encourage you to do so. Fill your life with online. Now, today's episode, we'll be discussing Newcastle, Tottenham, Watford, Liverpool, Leicester, Man United. We'll talk a little bit about Chelsea, a little bit about Alex Iwobi if we have time. Also, Man City. Pedri at Barcelona. Seb wants to talk about St. Pauli, so hopefully we won't make it to that bit. And also he wants to talk about Lazio and Inter again. Hopefully we don't make it to that bit. So all that's left for me to do for this introduction now is say I will leave you in the cool hands and the warm embrace of Herr Stafford Blore and Mr. Bull. Now, let us begin with Newcastle 2-3 Tottenham. Things we confirmed this weekend, Seb. Newcastle, still bad. Tottenham, also bad, but not as bad as Newcastle. Would you like to elaborate on that?
No, not really. That's kind of the conversation that we had on WhatsApp yesterday. Newcastle, bad. Yes. Tottenham, bad, but not so bad.
I used different words.
Yeah, we used harsher words. Words that we won't use on the podcast. Sure. Nastier, you know, more cutting words. Pretty much after about 15 minutes, it did seem as if Tottenham would be very, very bad in capital letters and exclamation marks. Because if you could assume one thing about that game, it was that Newcastle were going to have lots and lots of energy and lots of enthusiasm. The crowd was going to be really up for it. And Tottenham knew all of those things, chose to ignore them, and conceded a goal inside about 80 seconds, which is about as Tottenham as it could possibly get. But they came back and they played pretty well. Jury's still out a little bit on what they are, but there were good moments. Lucas Moura's played very well. Lucas Moura knew when to pass the ball, which is an unusual thing. Moura is a beat two players, then try and beat three others kind of footballer. But sure. I think particularly for the third Spurs goal, he saw what a good player he can be when he kind of rations himself. Tanguy Ndombele was fun. Interestingly enough, obviously, I was watching the game at home in Germany, and by the end of it, the German commentators were just giggling at Ndombele's touches, his kind of his elasticos and his little bits of skill, and that you could just, because they record in a studio rather than in the ground itself, so the audio isn't quite as isolated. So you can just hear the odd little bit of off-camera mirth going on.
Right.
And yeah,
I really noticed that during lockdown, by the way. I don't know if you heard this, JJ, when you were watching. I would watch all the games without the crowd noise. I hated the artificial crowd sound. But you would hear the commentators breathing, and you particularly would hear Gary Neville like talking to someone in the background whenever he wasn't actually talking. Always straining to hear.
Did you?
What was he saying?
Did you also hear every now and again during moments of excitement, you'd hear a commentator from a rival channel or radio station cut across the feed, and so you could hear. So you'd be listening to Martin Tyler, and you could hear maybe Peter Drury on the world feed in the background. It's very, very interesting.
I bet the royalties racked up.
Sure did.
Pretty sure that's not how it works.
I always enjoy being in the press box, being in the fortunate position where you get to go to those places.
Sure.
And you see the commentators doing the commentary next to you.
That's cool.
It's amazing.
Yeah.
Like, there's Martin Keown doing some cool commentary behind me.
Well.
Why am I here?
It's weird that you said amazing and then your first thought was to go to Martin Keown. I don't know, there's probably a few others that you could
have just picked. Trying his best.
Anyway, in this game, I really enjoyed how the cameras repeatedly cut to Amanda Stavely and Al Rumayyan, which was very funny to me. I did read an enjoyable tweet by someone. I can't remember who it was. It might have been a friend of the podcast, Nick Miller. Maybe not. I could be wrongly attributing. But anyway, let's say it was Nick Miller. He said, I'll be fine with them repeatedly cutting the camera over here, provided that they also do it every time Spurs score. And I noticed a bit of a sort of absence of that. You know, some funny memes over the weekend, though, of course. There was one of Al Rumayyan looking at his phone, and then the next picture was Jonjo Shelvey's Wikipedia page. And I did think he had the distinct look of a man who won't be playing for Newcastle next season as he trudged off the pitch following his second yellow card, Seb.
Yeah, it was kind of classic Jonjo, because what's the best possible outcome there? Maybe you save a goal, but I don't think it wasn't that sort of last man tackle that was denying certain goals, denying an opportunity.
Sure.
So all he really achieved was making sure that he doesn't have to play in whichever game Newcastle have next.
Yeah, because they were already 3-1 down.
They were already 3-1 down, and it had felt like all the air had gone out of the occasion, particularly after what happened to the supporter.
Yeah.
Who, by the way, while recording, we're latest news is that they're absolutely fine, or that they're recovering well and should be okay. So. But there was in the director's box, there was a kind of distinct impression of, oh, this is football. And I don't know. It was very strange. Very strange.
You watched some of this game, didn't you, JJ?
I saw all the second half.
You saw all the second half. How far do Newcastle have to go to not be bad?
They don't have very good players. And I can tell you how long it takes from my football manager save from FM21, which is a season.
Right.
And you just buy all wonder kids, get some loanies from Barcelona in.
Yeah.
And baby, you got a stew cooking. That's how they got to do it.
Do you think that's likely to happen in real life?
Well,
do you think Newcastle will buy all the wonder kids and get some Barcelona loanies?
I think they're going to have to start with the manager first. It seems increasingly clear that Steve Bruce is going to be allowed to leave.
Sure.
The club. And whoever they bring in will then want to identify players they want to, he or she wants to sign for the club. But that'll be, they can't sign too many at once. Like the kind of golden rule is that you don't sign more than three or four at a time first team players, because there's just no way really to make that gel.
Yes.
So you have to do it slowly, it takes time. And there's players they could probably sign, people like James Tarkovsky. We're going to try and cover this in a video soon, actually, on Tifo IRL.
Yes, we are.
A couple of players that they could probably get in who are coming towards the end of their contract that Newcastle could definitely afford to buy out and then have them early. So they're nice and ready. So that's, I imagine, what they do. But people like James Tarkowski just improve individual positions. Look at their like defenders. Like Manquillo set up the one of the goals. I can't remember what was he set up. But he was also, I think, really at fault for the cross that Reguilón puts in from the left. Doesn't go out to the winger early enough. Like, he's an experienced player. He should know quicker or know better to go out and do these things. Just doesn't do it. And that's where you get with better players. You don't have to worry so much about coaching them individually all of the time.
Yes, those tiny little mistakes. Those little things that you know they know, they just haven't done.
Yeah, like this kind of player is so much better than ones in the championship, yet is far removed from the sort of level that even Reguilón is just much better than any player. Yeah. And Saint-Maximin seems to be doing a lot more with the ball, which is nice because he's really fun to watch. We've talked about him a lot, haven't we?
Yes,
he's really good though.
He's fantastic.
Yeah.
It's nice to see Callum Wilson back as well. His header, I know it was very early on in the game and there were relatively few chances of a similar accord later thereafter, but a lovely header.
Well, Wilson would be one of the ones that I think they'd be able to not build around, but certainly keep. But him, Saint-Maximin, Sean Longstaff, you want to keep some of the Newcastle, what's the word?
Blood.
I was going to say like nebulous, but that's not what I mean.
You mean the sort of the
people from Newcastle, basically.
Yes.
Keep the core of the club locals. And the cells of the captain, that sort of thing in. Yeah, sure. Locals in.
Do you know what I think's funny? And I'll address this to you, Seb. I think it's funny that Frank Lampard is now the favourite to take the job, or at least is ahead of the odds, best odds for the next Newcastle manager. Currently 4-1. There you go. And following Frank is Paulo Fonseca, and then Lucien Favre, and then Steven Gerrard. So, you know.
It's quite telling, isn't it? Because we began the month talking about Antonio Conte. So, a couple of days ago, Jose Mourinho very graciously remembered that he had a deep personal connection with Newcastle. Well-remembered, Jose. Fantastic.
Well-remembered.
And now we're talking about managers who are available or who have a few flaws or who have had some bad recent experiences. And this is the way Newcastle will go. Like, in, we talked about timescale. Well, Newcastle are probably somewhere between 500 million and £1 billion away from being Tottenham, Arsenal. And that's not really anywhere. That's just kind of, you're not a challenger. So very, very difficult. I don't think Frank Lampard ends up going to Newcastle. I don't. I think he ends up probably taking some kind of age group job with the FA at some point. I don't see him.
He's not proven at all that he'd be right for that. Well, he's only had like two jobs really, but it wasn't amazing at Derby. They're pretty inconsistent and they just fell apart afterwards. Gerrard at Rangers, genuinely, he's probably a bit inexperienced because it's a club build rather than just a team build that you've got to have there. So you'd think someone older and more versed in just man management, really, more experience of that would be better suited.
Someone who knows what happens to a club over the course of 3 or 4 years, right?
Yeah, for
you
sure.
You want like a sort of, I think you want a David Moyes type character.
Like a good version of Steve Bruce,
You need someone that can deal with flux because it's not going to be like 2003 Chelsea. It's not going to be like the early days of Manchester City because it's just not. But you're going to have to deal with a squad which changes shape quite regularly and quickly. You're going to have to deal with lots of different personalities. And it's a really boring answer, but it's a situation which calls for experience. Somebody knows how to... You need a bit of pragmatism because you're not going straight to mid-table security. You're going to fight a relegation battle.
Well, don't you think, though, but on that basis, Seb, that I know we joke about Mourinho thankfully remembering... he kind of is the perfect manager for this scenario because also, like, they will lose lots of games over the next few years. Mourinho, we know now, is a manager who presides over teams that do lose games. But it's his perfect underdog position, isn't it? Like, it just feels right for him.
He also is quite fond of speaking out against his hierarchy, executives and owners. Not sure that that's exactly what PIF have signed up for with this one. He's too confrontational. He's too abrasive. He's not a hearts and minds guy, is he really?
I think he'd be right for it. I think he's right. The club is exactly the right position for him. He'd have the money to spend, but also he'd have all the excuses in the world. They wouldn't get rid of him for years. He could be there for 3 or 4 years, right? And as we've seen in the past, like, Mourinho has really thrived when he's been at underdog clubs, and Newcastle would very much be an underdog.
Well, we'd have to see we don't even know what the management structure of the club is,
sure,
above what the actual manager is and how, yeah, likely they are to fire underperforming managers, mm-hmm, and what their, I suppose, what their targets will be to hit, mm, which is why I thought, like, Gerrard, although, like I said, inexperienced in that club building part of it, he did take Rangers when they were in a very, not precarious position, but he turned them into a title winning team. Like, he did do that with, yeah, a good amount of staff around him, which might be where he can take that job and then try and get a Liverpool job afterwards if he does okay with it.
Yeah.
I mean, how do you get experience unless you do the thing? Maybe he'd be perfect for it.
Do the thing.
Yeah. Because they're, yeah, going to put a whole scouting network in, right? So it's not going to be him about recruitment. It's going to be a whole joint, mm-hmm, adventure.
I wonder which Newcastle player Jose Mourinho would hate the most. I mean, you want to say Jonjo Shelvey just because that's where your, that's where your heart goes.
There's no pressing.
But I don't know. There's about nine of them that he would just... You know that thing he does where he Dele Alli's someone, he Mkhitaryans them into, sure, kind of the squad's netherworld. It's like he could create a kind of small army of players that would just, you know, put onto a sort of a faraway training pitch.
Yeah, we could call them Newcastle. Anyway, let's move on now to quickly reference Seb, a piece that you and I sort of both read over the weekend, written by Adam Crafton, which was called Risking Death to Tell the Truth, Saudi Arabia's LGBT plus community. Quite heartbreaking read, wasn't it? But I figured it would be, in the middle of this conversation, it would be a useful thing to point towards.
Yeah, I learned a lot. I didn't know an awful lot of what I read. Well done to Adam. Fantastic journalism. And not just because it's an athletic piece. It's genuinely a must read. Harrowing. But I spent the last couple of weeks sort of reading through the sort of the fan reactions and the, oh, we can't be held responsible and we this is our football club and, you know, we weren't part of bringing these owners in. And okay, if that's the angle, okay. But then I think it's really, really important to educate yourself to understand what is happening here, what the process is that Newcastle are undertaking under new ownership, and also what it's providing a fig leaf or a mask for. As an article to read, it's deeply upsetting because in 2021, you kind of want to believe, and when you live in the West, it's very easy to convince yourself of this, that things like this don't really happen anymore, and that people aren't subject to this kind of treatment. It's pertinent, it's very relevant. I saw a few responses amongst the terrible abuse that Adam actually received for writing that, which was tediously predictable and awful, obviously. A lot of the sort of the responses from Newcastle supporters were about, well, you know, what's this got to do with Newcastle United? Well, now everything. And I don't think that's particularly unfair to kind of draw that line because the issue at the heart of the takeover was the lack of separation between PIF and the Kingdom of Saudi Arabia, the state. And the Premier League are convinced of that, but nobody within the general public has been educated as to what that separation is and where it exists. So it's very, yeah, very fair at the moment until people are instructed otherwise, until they're educated about this, to conflate the two.
I believe of the, six or seven members involved from the PIF, the director, who is now Al Ramayan, is the only one who isn't part of the Saudi government in some way or another, or a member of the royal family. You know, like the idea that there is a separation between the public investment fund and the government and royal family of Saudi Arabia is ridiculous, because the whole purpose of the fund is to serve the interests of the nation. I mean, it doesn't make any sense. And also, the Premier League haven't explained how they are convinced of the
separation.
This is the
problem, Joe. Like, there's been nothing from Richard Masters. There's been a very short and very obviously PR statement from the Premier League. Now, if Newcastle fans want to be angry at people's reaction, maybe direct your anger towards the Premier League. Because if you believe that there is a separation and if you believe that it's legitimate, okay, but nobody else has been told exactly what it is. And, you know, if you look at it, if you approach it from just a normal person, you look at what PIF is. Go on the website, for instance. You could, even if you're a Newcastle fan, I understand the relief of Ashley being gone. I get that completely. And I understand the excitement of a new era. Get that too. But it's a very, very easy assumption to make. And it's a very, very fair assumption to make that they are one and the same. And until the differences, until the Premier League shares the assurances it's received, then that's going to continue.
I like the idea that the assurances they've received come in the form of a letter that reads, "I assure you."
Yeah. Well, also that they're sort of that they're legally binding, because Well, if there's a breach, what happens next? The Premier League sues who?
The Kingdom of Saudi Arabia.
I'm not sure that would go that well.
Well, no, I think they said that in the scenario that they were no longer assured or convinced of the separation, that they would then have to put the government of Saudi Arabia through the owners and directors test.
Right.
And
I don't think any of these things are going to happen. So
no, I think that's unlikely. Anyway, we'll put a link to Adam Crafton's piece below the podcast. It really is. It's a weird thing to call it good because it is horrible to read. But I would encourage everyone to read it. There are things in there that I did not know. Specific references to the kinds of cure therapy that take place in Saudi Arabia, and there's some extremely unpleasant graphic passages.
Some of the people who contributed to that are quite a lot of bravery. To a lot of people who have every reason to be very afraid about speaking honestly about their own lives and their own experiences, and full of admiration for what they're willing to share. Sickening and horrible though it was.
This episode is supported by FX's Welcome to Wrexham. Celebrity owners Rob McElhenney and Ryan Reynolds' small-town Welsh football club has finally been promoted into League Two after 15 seasons in the National League. Dedicated staff and supporters celebrate the city's return to glory while bracing for the newfound challenges that come with being in a higher league. Will Wrexham AFC stand up to the challenge and rise again into League One? FX's Welcome to Wrexham premieres May 2nd on FX. Stream on Hulu.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Okay, well, listen, let's move on now to talk about Watford 0-5 Liverpool. JJ, you told me over the weekend that Mohamed Salah's pass for the first Mane goal.
Sané used to play for Man City.
Yeah. In fact, I watched a little bit of that game over the weekend and the commentator was calling him Zenner. Do they do that in Germany, Seb? They call Leroy Sané, he was calling him Zenner.
Yeah.
Okay, I need to get up on that. Anyway, for the Mane goal, you said it was the best pass you'd ever seen from Mo Salah.
Yes, one of the it'll be the assist of the season.
Assist of the season,
yes.
Do you really think so?
It's amazing. If it was, I don't want to do this thing, but I'm going to do it anyway. If it was Messi, we'd be going, wow, isn't that the best pass you've ever seen?
Would we?
So it's outside of his left foot. If it was right footed, it's so perfect to get around the defence the way that Mane gets onto it that you think it was a great pass. It's like a Beckham style curl, but it's outside of his left. The vision to see where he is from that position on the pitch that he's in is amazing. Like the technique and the vision for it is top tier.
Sure.
It's amazing.
Well, we have a video coming out this weekend, I believe, titled, Is Mo Salah the Best Player in the World Right Now? I believe Alex and I discussed this a little bit last weekend, but your thoughts, por favor, the bull?
I think he's the most informed player in the world.
Sure.
I still think Messi is the little alien that does things that shouldn't be possible. But Salah is at his absolute peak just now, and Liverpool look very, very good.
Like, yeah, Seth, JJ favorites. Said they're going to win the league.
I don't have a problem with that. There's a weird thing which has flared up.
You don't have
which
a problem is, with it.
No, but I've seen it in a few places. There's a little bit of a kind of an underdog attitude flaring up around Liverpool, which is kind of...
Sure.
I get it.
Well, they're used to it, aren't they? Well, that's what they're used to.
No, I mean, I get it because I think it's something I said to myself at the beginning of the season. Like, they're one of the... But they're the only contender not to have gone out and spent a huge amount of money on a single player. And so that can kind of create the perception of underdog. And, you know, they are at a little bit of a disadvantage financially, yes. But they remain a really good team. They remain a good team who haven't really integrated. Well, Ibrahim Konate hasn't really featured that much this season. Played a couple of games at most. So there's still, you know, there's still a few, still improvement to see from them. But that forward line's, I mean, with the caveat that Diogo Jota is unavailable, I'm not sure for how long, but for a few weeks, it's kind of interesting to see Mane, Firmino and Salah playing that well again, albeit against Watford, but we haven't seen like that chemistry for probably a couple of years, actually.
Yeah, I think so.
Watford were awful. Yeah, like defensively, sure. The shape's terrible.
Yeah.
Yeah, really poor.
I guess they're making a fresh start under new manager and perhaps...
Ranieri said he thought they seemed a bit nervous. Like they were at home and they seemed, maybe they were nervous to impress the new manager or something. If that's them trying to impress the new manager,
yeah.
Like they were all over the place. they did a little bit of analysis and Match the Day. It's not even worth going too into. There's just people being dragged out of position too easily, mm-hmm. had no idea what the shape was supposed to be. The boys up top weren't coming back to track what they needed to do. I don't think they're very good at all, Watford.
Sorry, I thought we started talking about Manchester United. You're still talking about Watford?
Yes.
Yeah, fine.
Yeah, I'm still talking about Watford. Oh, I see you're doing a bit. I thought I'd like zoned out.
No, I was trying to do a else. Joke and I got
genuinely
no,
thought that's what I'd
no
done.
Response at all. Carry on, please.
Okay. Oh, that's weird. I thought I'd like skipped 5 minutes of my life and while I was talking live to you. Yes, Watford rubbish, Liverpool really good.
You know, I read the other day, I can't remember if it was James Pearce or Simon Hughes, but one of the Athletic's Liverpool beat writers writing about Jurgen Klopp saying he's leaving in 2023. I didn't realise this was a kind of known thing anyway. He said he's going to finish then and take a bit of a break or whatever. This piece was about trying to convince him to stay, letting him have a year out or whatever and to come back, which I believe is something that's been offered to previous Liverpool managers in the past. So the club has some previous in that. I didn't realise he was planning on leaving in 2 years' time.
Well, his contract expires the exact same day, or it certainly was, as Steven Gerrard's expires at Rangers.
Oh.
But it seems the noises that I have heard around Klopp were that he wants to not do too many other jobs with it. He does his career the way he's done it and doesn't really, he's not going to be a nomadic going around clubs to find something.
Sure.
So either he'd end up at Germany as the national manager or he'd go to Bayern, which is what everyone in Germany eventually does if they're any use.
Yeah.
So it could be the Bayern and Germany and then done.
But well, based on how well Nagelsmann seems to be doing with Bayern at the moment, maybe.
But there's only so long your shelf life is. What?
Sure. I don't understand what you're saying.
Yeah, you know what I mean. So Nagelsmann will be there for however long he is and he'll want to move on to something else. You always have to keep moving on. Maybe 3 years is kind of the cycle you get for most managers now. Don't overstay your welcome at Liverpool, no matter how well he's doing at the time. I think it'd be, you know, it's like ending a TV show when you want to end at the right time. Like the US office ended at the right time. Any more, we're getting harm to it.
Well, but how long has he been there? He's been there now.
Nine seasons. No, I mean, the US office.
He's been there not much since, shorter than that.
I think
that,
2015.
Right? He arrived in 2015, so he's been there for 6 years. So two more years would make it eight. That would make it 8 years. But a long time for a manager.
It's kind of like two teams he's built as well. Because he built the first one that ended up being, I mean, that first Liverpool team that won the league was so, so good.
Yeah.
Like one of the, it just blew everyone away. And hasn't really done a rebuild of it, but added to it and tried to kind of blood new players in, like Harvey Elliott's coming through. And you see Curtis Jordan's now really standing out as a player. And Diogo Jota makes him a lot better as well. It's interesting to see how that goes, because like Borussia Dortmund didn't end very well for him because he had that really terrible season, which I think Seb would know more about than I do because you will have watched them more than I did. But then he managed to recover that, right? After the winter break, it came good and he left after that season. That was him done.
Yeah, it started as an absolute catastrophe and then there was a recovery. But then the recovery seemed to coincide with it being accepted that he was going to leave the club. It was one of those where, like, no, I don't think this is a situation you need to Klopp, because you see it with managers who are quite emotionally intense and who try to foster a kind of particularly tight form of cohesion. Like, it's just a fraying at some point. When Mourinho was, you know, Pete Mourinho, it used to happen to him, happens to Guardiola. Like at some point, players under Guardiola they get bored of his intensity. And Dortmund, there's a couple of injuries in Dortmund. There were some disappointments they didn't quite recover from. It's like a different situation, but basically one of those.
Yeah. And changes a person as well over that amount of time. Like the difference with Mourinho and Guardiola and stuff, when they were super intense, they were younger, they had more energy, they were new to it. Like there's a vibrancy they had about being a new manager. And I remember it was a thing, I think either Arsene Wenger said it or someone pointed it out to me, that Wenger, when he was first at Arsenal, he wasn't that old, maybe like mid-40s, 44, something like that. And his Invincibles teams, he would have been, so that would be, he could be almost their pal, the players' pal at that age. But then by the time he gets to the Invincibles, he'd have been more like most of their dads. By the time he left, he'd have been a lot of the players' kind of granddad's age. Just the difference in like how you relate to those players and the way you talk to them differed. Like Alex Ferguson had to differ the way he talked to players over time.
What up, Ronaldo? That's wicked. I feel you.
Exactly, yeah.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Now, listen, let's discuss Leicester 4 to Manchester United. Here's Manchester United's run coming up. And again, we won't linger on this for too long because Alex and I talked about this last week, but we haven't heard from Seb for a couple of weeks. And JJ on this topic, JJ, who I know is a big fan of Ole Gunnar Solskjaer, so we'll come to discuss that shortly. But Manchester United's run over the coming few weeks that JJ believes Ole will perform extremely well in. Atalanta, Liverpool, Tottenham, Atalanta, City, Watford, Villarreal, Chelsea, Arsenal. And then I've just written at the end of that. JJ, do you want to explain why you are so convinced that Solskjaer is quote, the best manager you've ever seen?
Good, this is excellent wind-up. I think Solskjaer has done a good job of being the Manchester United manager, and I think is often unfairly maligned due to things such as the way he looks and sounds and is.
Mm-hmm.
And I think some of it's really, some of it's a little bit cruel. However, increasingly, yeah, there is a little bit of a lack of, I don't know, people change their opinion of Ole Solskjaer all the time about, like, when they start winning, sure, they're like, oh, he's doing really well, what a good manager. And when he starts losing,
which is why you,
I'm trying
stuck
not to
the
do
same
that
world,
same
yeah
thing. But now I think he's bad.
Missing some of the, anyway.
But yes, the problem he's got is they've got, like, his tactical system is built around individuals being able to do.
There's a tactical system. I didn't realize
they play,
there was
play
one.
A 4-2-3-1, yes.
Hello? Sorry, go on, please continue.
And they tend to do well against good teams.
Right,
but
right
then they don't do so well against, I don't know, lesser sides. Like,
I mean, Leicester are a good team and they had their best performance
of
the
season. Like a big famous one. So
a
like,
big famous
like Liverpool,
one.
They're playing on the weekend. I bet they're really well set up and they play very well against Liverpool.
Sure.
I bet that'll happen.
Right.
And against Leicester, too many players look like they weren't quite into it. I mean, Pogba and Matic in the middle of the pitch, they had an awful lot of distance to cover vertically and laterally because this shape is not all over the place, but it just didn't work. It seemed a bit Sunday League-ish the way the team was set up. There was no drive, there was no press. I think we talked about this before, but when you have Ronaldo there, he doesn't do any pressing whatsoever, which means the three behind him, or maybe a four behind him, have to withdraw. They have to come back. So
well, Fernandes has taken to standing in front of him to be the press, but then Ronaldo doesn't press from behind. So Ronaldo, like in the defensive form, appears in the 10 role because Fernandes has to run past him to defend.
Yeah.
It is
and
shocking.
Fernandes doesn't even do that much pressing normally. This is the weird thing. There was a video I saw where it compared Ronaldo wanting a pass, I think it's from Matic, against Villarreal. He wants a pass from Matic, doesn't get it. It goes ahead of him. He just sort of gives up and goes, yeah. And then Cavani just decides to like put the turbo boosters on like in Rocket League and blast over it, gets boost along the way.
Sure.
Gets the ball.
Mm. Goes up the wall.
Goes up the wall.
Does
jumps
a musty
off
flick
it,
aerial.
Does a little a somersault.
A flip reset.
Yes.
Yeah.
Lands. And the giant ball is still bouncing.
Yeah.
But that he keeps it in play. And that's what you need. Even though it doesn't, you know, he's not going to score from the angle he gets at. Ronaldo only wants it. He was going to do something magic with it. But Cavani is just pushing it. And it's very interesting that Cavani's, I wonder if he's almost doing that to show Ronaldo, like, this is the effort you need to put in.
Sure.
It's a couple of years between them in age, I think.
But I think the thing with Cavani is that he's always been an effort filled player, you know, like even when he played at PSG, even when he was on the wing and it wasn't his natural position,
pressing forward,
like he's always put it seemed to put everything there is into a game. Seb, it's funny, isn't it? He appears to be exactly what United need at the moment, and you question again whether he'll, you know, whether he'll start against Liverpool. Probably not, right?
Yeah, because it's a real shame. If you think back to last season, a lot of the good about Man United's attack was about him, both in terms of sort of his goals, movements, contribution, but also the example he set. One of the things that we discussed when Ronaldo joined, one of the things that was discussed at large was, oh, he sets this great example and, you know, people aren't eating peanut butter anymore and, you know, they're just eating rice cakes for supper and all that stuff. And it's like, well, you had a lot of that with Cavani because Cavani's a great role model too for a lot of these young players. He's a good professional. He's had a very long career. He's been very successful. Ronaldo... I was watching, during my time off, I was watching the Mexico series of Narcos. And there's a scene where all the drug dealers come to a big party and they're paying tributes to the big boss. And one group buys Felix a tiger. And it's this massive, great tiger. They wheel into his house and they just leave it there. Be like,
tell us in more detail.
Well,
tell us more about this.
The tiger's really big. The party is very lavish. And this guy lives on a big...
Is it nice there?
It seems nice. It's a little bit gauche for my tastes.
Sure.
You know, drug dealers not known for subtlety. particularly when it comes to kind of decorating.
Do you know why that is?
They've got
because
too much
the drug
money.
Dealers that are subtle aren't known.
That's very fair.
Series on Netflix about them.
Yeah, well, they don't get arrested. They just make loads of money and then have a nice life.
So
sorry, do go on. Tell us. Keep telling your story
about the tiger. Yeah. So the tiger's there, and the boss is like, "Well, you know, thanks," but he's not overly enthusiastic, and that's because what do you do with the tiger? Like you've given someone a tiger, and like superficially. Thank you, because that's an unusual gift. But then you have to look after the tiger, and the tiger is in your garden. And Ronaldo is the tiger. And Solskjaer, I guess, is just...
What have you done to Seb, JJ? This sounds like something you would say.
But it's true, because Ronaldo is something that, if as a football manager, you should want. But something that within the confines of your team is quite dangerous. And is a threat. And this is kind of what's happened. Like in Ronaldo, Solskjaer has a player that he can't really take off without creating an atmosphere. He can't drop because, well, Ronaldo didn't come to Man United again to sit on the bench. And he's created all these problems that he now has to navigate. With also a lot of players that aren't really suited to
Well, this is you're absolutely right, Seb, because I was reading Laurie Whitwell's piece over the weekend, and he said something which was interesting, I think, which sums this up very well. He said, Solskjaer has escaped situations like this before. Very true, as JJ alluded to before. People are very quick to kind of get on the back of Manchester United and Ole Gunnar Solskjaer when things aren't going particularly well, and they've gone through difficult runs of fixtures before, played well against big teams, as JJ said. But the key difference here, as Laurie points out, Solskjaer could justifiably point to previously United being in transition, a young team emerging from the trauma of Jose Mourinho's era and growing together. Now, though, United have matured to a point where expectations of a genuine title challenge are entirely valid, Seb.
Yeah, because the thing about Man United, and it feels like it's been this way for maybe 8 or 9 years, most of the years since Ferguson's departure, that it's always about players at Man United. You know, get me these three players. I need the player in this position, this position, this position. Man United still have positional shortages. I mean, I don't think their issues in midfield, defensive midfield, need any more coverage. Legitimately, they need a couple of players in there. But the scale and scope of that problem has been wildly exaggerated. It's turned into this kind of unmanageable
floor. It's set them back hugely.
Yeah, it's a problem. But then most teams have problems, and Manchester United has spent an awful lot of money in many different positions now, on the defence, on the attack, on the midfield too. And I have some sympathy with JJ's position on Solskjaer, because I think he's done some good things at Man United culturally. Like, I think that he's created something at the club that was missing. He has created a certain sense of identity. I know it's a bit of a trite thing to say, but it's true. There are some similarities with what worked well before Ferguson retired. The coaching structure is interesting. I'm not sure they have quite the right people in those roles, like in the Michael Carrick position, Kieran McKenna. I don't know whether that's I'm not saying that they're not. I'm not sure. But the approach above seems to be to decorate a team with the kind of superstars that they don't have the right manager to manage, if that makes sense as a sentence. It just doesn't. The jigsaw doesn't fit together. It doesn't mean that you have to damn Solskjaer. It's just that he seems increasingly like he doesn't quite have the muscle to wrangle his tigers. There we go.
I'd like to see another manager who, I mean, everyone has, I think Mauricio Pochettino has always talked about it as being like, oh, they should get Poch. He's the best manager ever. Currently not doing very amazing things with PSG.
This is one of my favourite JJ squad points. He brings this up after 3 or 4 drinks in the pub. Anyway, pretty regularly. Here we go.
Right, so but how do you make this Man United team press? You can't really do it. Like, Sancho was used to doing it in a certain way.
No, you've abandoned the
Dortmund.
Point. No,
this is part of it.
No, your point.
No, this is it.
No, the point I like that you make in the pub is about how Pochettino isn't like the player, the manager everyone
thinks
he is.
He's not the best manager of all time, no.
Well, no, that's...
But has anyone claimed him to be?
Oh, it feels like everyone loves Poch, they're all on about him. Anyway, Greenwood, Fernandes, Sancho, you're not getting an awful lot of pressing out of them, right? So if Ronaldo's not doing it, and they're not doing it, it leaves most of the team behind it. Pogba and Matic, really slow in possession. Another Pogba mistake in this game that gives away the ball for, I think, a Leicester goal, or at least a chance. It's too much pressure on the back line, and the way that they try and build out from the back is a, the way they build out from the back isn't ideal because different players don't do what they're supposed to be doing, and Wan-Bissaka can't rely on to get the ball forward. Mm. Players like McTominay can't pass it forward. They can run with it sometimes. Becomes a problem. Like the weird thing, like they bought Varane, obviously a very good defender, but Lindelof's like their best creator of chances at the moment because he can hit those long balls over the top.
Sure.
Because you can't really press with United, so you have to engage in a different way, mm-hmm. which draws the opposition out. And then if they push out with a high line, in theory, Lindelof's really useful to get the ball over the top for players like Greenwood, Ronaldo, Sancho and Fernandes to get on the mm-hmm. end of. Mm-hmm. But you can't rely on that as chances because that's essentially long ball football.
Sure, sure.
Yeah, I mean, if you put Pochettino in there now, would he be able to make that team press? You wouldn't get Ronaldo pressing. So would he play him? You play Cavani, he just becomes another problem.
Bench him.
Well, yeah, but then you've got Ronaldo on the bench.
So?
That'd be an issue.
I'd bench him, for sure. Oh. I honestly think, like, if he wasn't there,
yeah,
they'd be playing a lot better. They don't know what to do because he's there.
Or out of possession, 100% agree.
They've called that disease too, where like every player feels that they need to, when a passenger play develops, particularly the young players seem to feel the need to pass to him, whatever's happening.
Mason Greenwood, which is why I think Mason Greenwood is the greatest player
of all time. I like Mason Greenwood as a nine.
Me too.
He's not a pressing player. We've talked about that. He doesn't really have much, hasn't learned or isn't sort of able to kind of show much defensive responsibility. Fine. But then he's a really talented goal scorer. This is quite one of the things we talked about a few months ago about what would happen when Ronaldo join. It's like you have to move all these other players that have their better positions. And like, I know what Cristiano Ronaldo was, and I know to an extent what he still is as a goal scorer, but he's not Manchester United's future.
It was a mistake.
Yeah, of course.
I think like history will judge this as a critical error in the building of that team.
Because at
the
end of last season, Man City.
Yeah, that's exactly what it is, I think. Because at the end of last season, Solskjaer's United were on the up. You felt that whilst there were clear deficiencies within the team, the vast majority of that, and I'm sort of repeating some of the things I said last week, so I'll keep it brief, but the vast majority of the transfer window was very impressive. It was very effective. They had a better window pre-Ronaldo than they have done in many years before that. And also you felt that the team was gathering towards something. You know, whether or not they were going to become title challengers, I think that was still... one vision too far. But seeing Ronaldo at the head of the team now, they've gone back 2 to 3 years. It's ruined. It's ruined something that was good.
No, I agree. And the thing is, like, it's not that, I said, United are basically a team of individuals, but those teams can still win things. Like, mm-hmm. I think best proven by that Real Madrid team that won the three Champions Leagues in a row, but who eventually became a team, even though they were individuals. And I think there's a really good example in Michael Cox's piece in The Athletic today about this game and the difference in how the two teams pressed, pointing out things we just talked about, Ronaldo and Fernandes and stuff like that. But you see the cohesion in how Leicester press, where everyone knows when to go and why and where, and that's a full team press. That you can't just press with the front three and everyone else is leaving space behind, because that just leaves space. It's easy to pass through, which happened again and again and again and again.
So is it no wonder that Pogba and Matic were screwed in the game?
Oh, 100%, like, because they've got too much space. Again, like vertically and laterally, that like was first touched at the very start. There was just too much space in the midfield. Just two of them, they needed three at least to be able to manage what they were doing. Against the midfield three of Leicester as well. And Fernandes is pushing forward to try and do the work that Ronaldo's not doing. It's all over the place. But like the actual structure of the press is all wrong. And that to me seems like bad coaching. Mm-hmm. Because some of the players at United want to try and press to win the ball back, but they can't because of the way they're set up. But they don't know where they're meant to engage
they
when they're not.
They didn't know what to do.
Whereas Leicester had a full court press, clearly very organised, coached. They knew exactly what to do and when to do it, is what I'm trying to say. And like Brendan Rodgers has got that team well played.
There was a moment in that game, and this is in the Michael Cox piece too, where it's a build-up phase in the second half, about 60 minutes, and the ball's with the fullback, Steiner. And Ronaldo turns around to Greenwood and sort of says, press that guy. And Greenwood, goes another. It just runs in a straight line. Ball's cut in infield. I think back to one of the centre-backs, and Leicester exit in a different way. And all that's really been achieved is that Greenwood is just miles up the pitch and out of the play and not providing protection for his fullback. Yeah. So it's kind of like, it's something that gets said every now and again, but like bad pressing, it's kind of worse than no pressing.
Yeah. Yeah, and in that example, a very specific part of it is because Greenwood runs in a straight line and not like you're supposed to curve your run just to block a pass somewhere else. So you're dictating where the next pass can go. And either Greenwood is just not being paying attention to what he's doing or doesn't know that in that situation, he has to curve his run. It's either bad coaching or Greenwood switching off, which is again a sign of not being very well coached because you should know what to do in that situation. And just not making that curved run, running a straight line, means that Castagna has like two options to pass, so it's easy to get out through the press again, yeah.
Okay.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard it right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer, if you ask me. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/credit card.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
Ah, we are back. Now, a little word on Chelsea, Seb. Lukaku hasn't scored a goal for Chelsea in six games.
Five games plus 14 minutes.
Six games.
You can kind of hear like the forces mobilizing against him as well. And
sure,
all moving back in the direction of those conversations that used to happen before he moved off into Milan. I feel a little bit sorry for him. I'm not sure he's being used in quite the right way. He seems to be...
Well, this is what I was going to say. Yeah. This is what I'm going to ask you. They can't get a tune out of him.
I just don't think they're creating quite the right opportunities. I mean, he had a little bit of a hack over the bar in the second half, but that one opportunity he had in the first half, he tucked away quite nicely, offside though. You do see him isolated quite a lot. You do see him with his back to a defender and waiting for support players to gather around him a bit more than you might do. I think also one of the things that's hurting him is that the Serie A that he ran wild over was a little bit weaker than usual. He played magnificently well and he was absolutely brilliant. I'm not trying to take away anything from his performances over there, but feels like... the expectation that he would just drop back into the Premier League and be exactly what he was at Inter Milan is, I think, a little bit unrealistic. Also, listen, Chelsea have had a sort of periodic absence of Mason Mount to cope with. Kai Havertz hasn't started as many games as he might have done. I feel like he's a really important piece to have around Lukaku because of the way he plays. And so we think about someone like Mount. Like, if you think about who we thrived around at Inter, Barella, obviously, he did very well with. Hakimi, he did very well with as a sort of a supporting wing back. Christian Eriksen was, towards his second half of the season, was a very important part of the supply. So when you start taking some of these sort of attacking pieces away from him, Latour and Martinez, his combination with Martinez in Serie A was at times breathtaking. He doesn't really have that. Timo Werner is not Lautaro Martinez in any way whatsoever. Werner has a purpose. It's actually very funny listening to German commentators watching Timo Werner because obviously he's had some really bad moments since he came to England. And it's like a mum or a dad at a sports day and the kid's not really very good. And there's a little bit of like embarrassment to that. Come on, you know, we still love you. It's a little bit like that at times. It's a little bit uncomfortable. But obviously, Werner, nowhere near the kind of the rounded talent that Martinez is in that position. And so as a result, you don't have that proximity that Lukaku seem to really benefit from. And so I got some sympathy. I don't think it's kind of always, you know, I don't think it's been any regression. I think he's been a bit unlucky. But I do fear for him because he seems like quite a sensitive guy. He's always been quite sensitive to criticism and his form always seems to have responded to what people are saying about him. I remember those like long goalless sequences at Man United where it just seemed like the conversation got too heavy and got on top of him. So hopefully that doesn't happen this time, but hasn't been great. But Chelsea were good enough over the weekend.
Sure, they were fine. I mean, also Brentford were fun to watch though, JJ. Right. Very direct. Ben Chilwell apparently described the last half an hour as, quote, hell on earth.
I'm not sure it was like that.
No.
Hell on earth.
Well, I don't know. I mean, you're only really, you are like disputing a subjective opinion.
Are we going to have this philosophical argument about the what's worse?
You mean the pub argument?
Yes. Yes.
I won the pub argument.
By definition, it was a philosophical argument about the worst thing that could happen to me is equally as bad as the worst thing that happened to you.
No, even if see, it's this not is the issue same. With you is you still don't understand my argument. What anyway, you've done there
I really
is
like how the goalkeeper kicks the ball far for Brentford.
Mm.
So whenever they win the ball, he gets it. He instantly punts out like it's Pro Evo and you do a manual kick.
Yeah.
Miles out. And then Tony takes it down and they go from there.
Yeah.
And it's like rugby. They gain territory like really quickly.
That's great, isn't it?
Yeah. Very direct. They were unlucky not to score as Edouard Mendy was pulling off amazing saves. He's a really good goalie.
Yeah,
he's really come on, I think.
Well, as Seb pointed out, he saved a number of shots with his face.
Got to use everything you've got.
Yeah.
Especially the face.
There we go. Use the face. Anyway, Man City. Ferran Torres, Seb, is out for 2 to 3 months with a fractured foot. What a shame. Striker issues deepening there, I think. Particularly now that we've seen how good it looks like Liverpool might be this season. Man City have got something to live up to, haven't they?
Yeah, because also Torres is so important because it seems like as in the international arena, Premier League defences don't quite know what to do with Ferran Torres because he doesn't really fit into the right bracket.
Like he's the one.
Yeah, he's sort of a between position guy. So you're not quite sure whether he's a winger or a forward or inside forward. And he's kind of all of those things at the same time. Also, I quite like Gabriel Jesus as a player, but I don't feel good about relying on him because he's quite a patchy player. Also, and one of the things that probably will become relevant in about a month's time is he's a player that's playing international football for a red list country. He will go off in November again, sorry, for international duty, and he will have to kind of, you know, suffer the fatigue of traveling across time zones, playing football, traveling back. And City is short in that position anyway, because they don't really have another centre forward who can come in and deputise. And so without Torres, who allows them to do so many different things and also allows them to do the different things at other positions. Like, I feel like Torres is a good complement, is a better complement to someone like Grealish, probably De Bruyne because of the types of runs that Torres makes. It's a problem. It's a problem. I think they have to do something in January, really.
Well, maybe if they wanted to do something in January, JJ, they could spend €1 billion to release Pedri from his new Barcelona contract and turn him into a striker.
Yes, and? Pedri is not a striker.
Seb, you wanted to talk about St. Pauli.
I just wanted to talk about some.
And now it's the end of the podcast. No. I'm so sorry about that. We so have close. Actually just run out of time there. Producer Don
doing,
was whistling
you're
doing in my ear.
The Jimmy Kimmel, Matt
it's
Damon
the end of the podcast.
Me, no.
Let's just kick him out of the Zoom call. Oh, I can't do that. End of the podcast there. Thanks so much, Seb Stafford Blauhair, Stafford Blau, Guten Tag. No Danker for coming, of course. No Danker. Many dankers.
Many dankers.
Many dankers. And all the best to the people of Germany when you see them.
Yeah, I shall pass on.
JJ Bull the Bullard, much appreciated.
Thank you.
Get up to any, do any, that's the end. Thanks, everyone. What? We'll be back next week with more from JJ Bull and Alex Stewart. And Seb, I don't know who's here. Thanks to producer Don. And of course, thanks to Adonis, producer Adonis too. Goodbye.
The Athletic.
As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.